This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 2nd of March 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to a brand new edition of and a brand new version of Culture with me, Robert Bound. This is how we're doing it now. It'll be half an hour of concentrated cultural goodness with a fresh and vibrant martini with a twist to the old world's pint of mild. We're shorter, snappier, more incisive, and we're going to try and be conclusive because we've got a new way of doing business where each week we'll set a question and spend our allotted 30 minutes attempting to answer that question. Simple as that. This week, in a world in which I've been offered a curated selection of ice cream and flicked about on a supposedly curated on-demand TV channel, I'll ask, why does everyone think they're a curator?
I think the term has become a bit of a buzzword, but I think curating is a lot more than just putting things in order from A to Z.
That's all to come here on Culture with me, Robert Bounds, on Monocle 24. This, ladies and gentlemen, is what we're up against.
We are all curators of the media around us.
First of all, you should curate because it is too damn hard to create. So I love to curate. And I think the test for curation is, once I share it, will my followers share it to their followers?
She will be able to personally curate, meaning that they're going to basically go and handpick the items that they're sticking into your box.
And I'm here filming my curated Christmas area in my craft room.
I think it was my publisher who said, why don't you let her curate it? You know, make it my kind of musical vision.
Curate and share the information that's going to be the highest value to your target market.
Community management in a co-working space is crucial. My primary job is what I consider being actually curation.
It's enough to make your teeth itch. Community management, we're not quite sure how that one works. In order to demystify the word curator, we're going to start things off by giving it some context. According to our dictionary, a curator is a keeper or custodian of a museum or other collection. The word stems from the curate in the Catholic Church, responsible for the care of all souls. And according to Tobias Capwell, curator at the Wallace Collection in London, taking care of things is what the term is all about.
Curator just means taking care of, someone who takes care of something, curare, to take care of. And that's basically what we do.
We'll hear more from Tobias later on, but now we're going to turn to Adrian George. He's just published a new book called The Curator's Handbook, which provides the practical knowledge required to do the job correctly. If you're taking care of something, then your role doesn't end at picking out a few of your favourite things. There's the logistical, commercial, and far less glamorous side of curating too. As Adrian explained,
I think everybody wants to know about curating. I think it's a bit of a challenge for a lot of people to become particularly art curators. The market is very competitive. There's a proliferation of postgraduate courses in curating across the world. And I think everybody has the ambition to be the international Uber curator jetting around the world making exhibitions. But that's not the reality of most curators' jobs. So the book is there to really tell people the down and dirty aspects of curating, which is often much more pragmatic and hands-on than most people would like to think.
You mentioned this idea of the jet-setting international curator. Maybe it's a sort of people have in their head Hendrik Ulrich Obrist, one of these sorts of impossible to ignore kind of characters on the contemporary art scene at the moment. Is that, do you think, what attracts people to curators? Is that perhaps, you think, why that word has been overused and perhaps wrongly used in the last 10 to 20 years?
I think there's certainly the high profile media presence of some curators has helped people to perceive curating as a very glamorous profession. To some extent, it is. There's a lot of parties. There are a lot of events. You can mix with super wealthy, the fashionistas, the film stars. It's possible to do that. But for most curators, then you have to also get to the office, sort out all the emails, deal with the logistics and the practicalities of moving artworks. So yeah, it can be a 24/7 lifestyle. and how you
not
navigate
always in a good way.
Not always in a good way. And how you navigate that can be quite a challenge as well. But I agree with you. I think the term has become a bit of a buzzword. Yeah. But I think curating is a lot more than just putting things in order from A to Z.
And as we said, the book is it's a beautifully laid out thing. I particularly like it, sort of, I don't know what we call it, Eve Klein, perhaps, blue cover. And it's very much a practical book, isn't it? Is that what you set out to do, to make something, if you want to actually go into this business, if you want to maybe jump the queue to get to the top of this business, this is the sort of book that you wanted to put together?
It was a weird experience for me, actually, because I've been in the profession quite a while. I came to curating as a second career. And when I arrived in the museum where I first started working, I worked in the New Museum in New York and at Tate in London and in Liverpool. And when I arrived in that job, I found myself struggling to pick up the art history and critical theory aspect of the job that I needed to do. All the practical stuff I already knew. I'd run a business before. And then slowly over time, I was involved with interns and volunteers. And I had some amazingly bright volunteers, super smart men, women, boys, girls, students, whatever, would come to my department. They would know everything about history and theory, but they couldn't send a fax, or they didn't know how to arrange with the technician to move the object from A to B. You need to know all of the theory, and you need to know all of the practical. And that book, The Curator's Handbook, will help you with the stuff that the art history and theory degrees don't tell you, how to work with your art handling team. Make a friend of the registrar, because actually they're really going to help you pull your exhibition together. So that's the kind of information that you learn through experience. But because the market is now so competitive, if you come into the job already with that knowledge, it will give you, I think, a head start.
I was going to ask you whether a curator has ever had taken care of a gift shop.
Actually,
I'm not joking.
That is in the book.
Right.
Because I absolutely want to be involved in product and merchandise and publications related to the exhibition. In planning an exhibition, I will have done a huge amount of research, and I would certainly have a list of books that I think would be relevant to someone to read in relation to the exhibition. And also, I want to know what merchandise is being made, perhaps to sell in relation to the exhibition. I wouldn't want something really tacky. I don't know whether I'd want an umbrella with an artist's work on it. I want to have some input into that. So you kind of really have to think strategically, but also sometimes tangentially to the prescribed course in terms of becoming a curator.
And on that note, do you think, is curating becoming a little bit more commercial, even in public spaces? As you said, certainly museums that are free entry, even if they're not, most of them are struggling or fighting for funding. Do you think that there is a more commercial way of putting together shows in public spaces now?
My understanding of the way things are going right now is that you tend to, if the exhibition is free, there tend to be other bought things that go along with it. So there might be an education program or a film program that you buy your ticket for. Or they have a specially designed cupcake in the store or some in the cafe or something that's been designed by who knows who, you know, some interesting young artist or whatever. So there's always a way to monetize the product. But I think my objective is to make the exhibition, to make a statement.
Either beautiful or ugly in an interesting way.
Exactly. Beautiful or ugly in an interesting way. I think that's going to be my next book.
There we are. We sorted that.
Yeah.
All we need is an umbrella with some book covers on it.
Yeah.
Dotted around, don't you think?
Maybe not.
Maybe not. And finally, Adrian, I wondered what you thought of the term curator in the current sort of media environment, maybe in the current cultural environment, in the current retail environment. It is overused, isn't it? Everyone says they're a curator. Everyone putting more than one thing together on a shelf, as we said at the beginning of the interview, calls himself a curator. Are you very certain of what a curator is and the terms in which it should really be used?
Yes.
And maybe you'd like to enlighten us as to that opinion.
I personally don't mind it if someone says they're curating their CDs or they're curating their film program or they're curating their radio show. I don't mind it. But what it does do is it, for lots of people, it distracts or disguises what the curator is and does. So there's an assumption that actually it's a very simple job and it's just about selecting work and putting them on the walls. And so people think that's quite easy, I can do that. And actually it's quite hard and there's a lot of risk attached to it. One of the contributors to the book, who's the director of the Museum of Contemporary Art in Sydney said, if you do it well, the public don't see what you've done, but if you do it badly, they'll really feel it. So I thought, yes, that's absolutely right.
Ah, and that was the practical side, as told by Adrian George, curator and author of The Curator's Handbook, which is out now, published by Thames and Hudson. You're tuned into Culture on Monocle 24, where we're asking in our new Slim Jim half-hour format a question every week. On this edition, that question is, why does everyone think they're a curator? Later on in the show, we'll discuss the role of the contemporary curator and their role in the avant-garde. But what about someone who's curating a collection of historical artefacts or artworks? Tobias Catpull is the curator of arms and armour at Monocle's local, the Wallace Collection. He says that the focus of his role isn't on organising a physical collection, but it's the research and cataloguing that's important to him. Culture producer Holly popped out to meet him.
The curators at the Wallace Collection are pretty classical examples of what the job entails. We're the academic specialists who are responsible for the researching and interpretation of the collection. So we're in charge of developing the displays, doing special exhibitions, conducting research into different parts of our collections. We're the intellectual carers of the collection, you might say. We're not responsible for the physical safety and care of the objects. That's quite clearly the realm of the conservators. Ideally, curators and conservators should work quite closely together. Curators tend to be more senior, but not by any means all the time. At the Wallace, we have final say over any decision made about any part of the collection and its care.
Because, like you said, it's quite academic and involves a lot of research, and you know, you get people who claim to curate the news, which is a really immediate thing, or you know, curate a range of bath towels or something. Do you feel that people using the word in that way maybe belittles your job title?
Well, I mean, the job title already varies. The nature of the job varies depending on the type of museum and the size of the museum. You know, a huge place like the British Museum is organized in quite a different way than a place like the Wallace Collection. On the one hand, it's important to maintain an academic standard and a clarity of what the qualifications are to deserve the title. I think while it's important to be preserving and of that academic rigor, it's also important not to be too much of a fuddy-duddy about it and be suspicious of a changing environment. If you are taking care of something and you have a high-level qualification to know a lot about that specialist area, fine, you know, you're a curator. But I think for me, at the heart of it, a curator is about a collection. It's about a museum's collection, whatever that is. Or I think probably it's justifiable to say that you can be a curator of a subject area that is, again, directly tied with a museum's collection. It's a misapplication when the title is being used because it sounds impressive and someone wants to make something sound, you know, give it more gravitas than it really deserves.
Perhaps you could explain some of the things that you have to do as part of your job.
My major project at the moment is pretty essential. I'm responsible not just for European arms and armor, dating from the medieval and Renaissance periods, but also for a very significant collection of Balkan, Middle Eastern, Iranian, Persian, and Far Eastern Asian arms and armor. And this is an area of the collection that has never been cataloged. The Wallace Collection has existed for over 100 years. We have a huge and very rich, very significant part of the collection which has never been properly cataloged. So that is as essential a function as any curator can have. Your institution needs to know what it has. And if a collection has never been properly cataloged, you don't. That's, apart from anything else, that's what a curator should be doing that research, finding out what the things are so they can be properly displayed and people can be told more about them.
So do you think that's maybe the part of the role of the curator that's being lost when the word is misused?
Yeah, I mean, I think essentially it's about specialist knowledge. It's about specialist knowledge of whatever comprises the core of your particular museum. And if you are a high-level specialist who is right at the heart of maintaining an institution's knowledge about itself and its collection, then you're a curator. But if there's a lack of that, you know, academic experience, a lack of that practical, studied experience, then you're something else.
Tobias Capwell there, curator of arms and armor at the Wallace Collection, and he warns us about being fuddy-duddy, but at the same time knows his onions. He was speaking to Culture's own Holly Fisher. After break, we'll wield something of a double-edged sword as we speak to a PR man, surely to blame for this curatorial bandwagon jumping, right? Wrong. Hamish Thompson's got a bee in his bonnet about curators, and he's up in just a sec.
The Entrepreneurs is Monocle's weekly audio guide to the world's best business minds. From industry giants and family outfits to the one-man bands and clever upstarts.
We saw all this immense amount of frustration by young people finding their first jobs, their second jobs, internships. And we said it's ridiculous that in this day and age, with all the technology we have, we can't solve that.
Tune in at 1900 hours London time every Wednesday to hear insider tips, big challenges, and sparks of insight. We take an hour-long tour of the worlds of fashion to food, timepieces to tech, and hear the founding stories of some of the smartest names around.
That's The Entrepreneurs, premiering every Wednesday at 1900 hours London time, in association with Pictet.
You're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bounds, on Monocle 24, where today we're asking why everyone thinks they're a curator. One person who's fed up with the word being bandied about by people umming and ahhing over their favourite bath accessories or cheeses is Hamish Thompson. You might remember Hamish from last year when he came on the show to talk to us about the sort of PR spiel that clogs up your inbox, leaving you confused rather than enlightened. He did his own quick internet search to curate this list of curators that have got his goat.
Curated hot chocolates, curated dog jackets, the curated bride, a curated list of domain name registration tools, curated content, curated news apps, a curated Thanksgiving, curated beards, curated burgers.
Curated burgers. Now, this is the sort of stuff. Let's stop at curated burgers. This is where my buzzer goes off.
Yeah.
This is kind of where language serves only inanity,
by
the sound of it, where something that was originally a term, presumably it was a religious term, then it became a term that was associated with museums, and now, scented candles are curated, or hamburgers. Sneaker shops are often curated, I find, these days.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, everything is, you know, I mean, everybody's talking about sort of curated news and stuff like that, which I think is a massive contradiction in terms because, you know, the whole thing about curation, I mean, I did the history of art at university. So I guess one of the avenues I might have gone down is to become a curator at at an art gallery.
You're a curator.
I am indeed. Yes. Yes. Nicely done. I think there's a buzz
Sorry
on that
about
one.
That, yeah.
It was clear to me that curation is about a work of art and then about sort of understanding in its context, its history and all the rest of it. And curation has become this term that is a bit like kind of choosing stuff from a pile.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. So you get these people who say, "Oh, I'm curating a new burger restaurant and we've got treacle cured volcano smoked bacon and homemade beer cheddar and all the rest of it." And basically, this is about a bunch of people who've gone to Waitrose.
They've made some stuff.
They've gone to a market. They've bought a bunch of things, popped them together. Hey, presto, I've curated something, which is absolute nonsense.
And also, what is particularly annoying in this circumstances, Hamish, is people. It's simply people's job. It is a cook's job. It is a chef's job to write a menu. It is a magazine editor's job to edit people's copy and to choose the articles that go in it. It is not curating something. It is simply doing the job that you already expect them to do. You'd expect a chef to write a menu.
Yeah.
You don't have. They haven't curated the ingredients. That is what you put in a spaghetti bolognese. What is this? Is this a sense of wanting to belong to the art world, wanting to up the aesthetic ante on language? What is it?
I think it's about trying to aggrandize things. I mean, we see this with terminology all the time. So we see, you know, the appropriation of words like curate, artisan, which means thrown together roughly and possibly dipped in a bit of mud. You know, super excited, which means momentarily enthused. Awesome, which means acceptable standard. You know, it's an overused term.
Yeah.
All of these things are being used to sort of decorate things, where it's actually sort of fundamentally quite ordinary. And I think the reason for this is, and, you know, here we go back in time, I think the internet is becoming a bit like the market that you find off the main square in Morocco or Khan el-Khalili in Cairo. These ancient markets where people are desperately trying to talk about their wares. And if you walk through those markets, you know, you get people shouting at you from all directions. So the use of terms like curate is designed to make something that is fundamentally ordinary seem quite middle-brow and exciting.
Just finally, you mentioned at the top of our conversation about curating the news and how that's a contradiction in terms. That was an interesting thing. I remember reading something about Tina Brown, the editor now of the Daily Beast, formerly Vanity Fair editor. Someone described the Daily Beast as a news aggregation site. She says it's not an aggregation site, it curates the news. What is the contradiction in terms of aggregating the news, Hamish? What does that mean?
I mean, I get the idea that people helping you to select the things that you're interested in makes sense. The issue with news curation is that curation to me implies spending a great deal of time thinking about things and thinking about contexts. And news is immediate. So it is simply impossible to curate news. News happens all the time.
News just happens, presumably. And you obviously choose what goes first, second, third, fifth, whatever in your running order.
Yeah.
I can count to five. I just left out four for some reason. but presumably, yes, it is. It's purely an editorial decision. And it is something you expect of a news editor to do anyway. They don't have to curate the news. Presumably, you know that there are millions of other things happening in the world. You expect the news. The news, by its very essence, is a curated medium or is a chosen thing.
It right? is. News is what's interesting. Right. And also the kind of the news cycle, you know, back in when I started out in PR, you know, we talked about the sort of the 24-hour news cycle. It's now, you know, arguably the 24-minute or even the 24-second news cycle in some senses. And to apply a term like curate to something that is so ephemeral and flimsy, as are the things that we've discussed, like, you know, restaurant menus and all the rest of it, just makes absolutely no sense at all.
Hamish Thompson's good, isn't he? Now, for our last guest, David Balzer, art critic and author of new book, Curationism, How Curating Took Over the Art World and Everything Else. Our point precisely, David. So what does he think?
The curator is always trying to impart value and perform that value. And the root of the contemporary sort of back formation, transitive verb form of curate comes from the world of performance art. Its first citation in the OED comes from the early 1980s and from the New York Times. So I would say that in terms of objectivity, we're talking more about a subjective understanding of an audience and who an audience might be. So I would say that what's at the heart of curating is this notion of performing value with a heightened consciousness of an audience looking at that performance of value.
The language of curation is a tricky one sometimes, David, isn't it? I mean, there is, I think that you refer to this in your book, I might be paraphrasing it, there is art world English. This is tricky stuff to get your head around. Do you think curators put people off from potentially amazing shows by the tortuous way in which they try to describe the works that they've gathered together under one roof sometimes?
I talk a lot in my book about how the curator is actually a figure in at least the contemporary art world that wants to, that claims to demystify what an exhibition is, to sort of let people in. But there's a way that theoretical language has. It intends to demystify, it intends to critique, but what actually happens is that, of course, it remystifies things. It makes things even harder to understand. So there's a bit of a paradox or duality there. That whole idea of articulating or proposing sort of an exposition of an artwork is a very curatorial idea, of course. Why would we want to talk about an artwork and why would we want to explain it? This is sort of a condition of the avant-garde, right? It's a condition of people creating experimental work that perhaps is a little bit beyond the understanding of the average viewer. It was really the curator that emerged as kind of a spokesperson for that art.
Do curators tend to start things from scratch? Do they say, let's do a show about such and such and corral artists to make fresh work for that idea? Or most of the time tend to take pieces that have already been done, whether they're 200 years old or 5 years old? Presumably it's the latter normally, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's important not to over-romanticize what a curator actually does. in the workplace, in the cultural workplace. The former definition that you give is true of this kind of class of elite curators who are, of course, working in that sort of classic contemporary curator, conceptualist curator vein, where they're almost like theatrical directors, you know, putting on a show, yeah, from scratch, casting all the artists, but commissioning the work. But that's a bit of a fantasy, especially given how underfunded most major art institutions are these days. So there's the romance and the idea of the curator, which I think is carried on to popular culture. But then there's the actuality of a working curator, which is pretty humdrum and pretty procedural and institutional. And they're often just doing, I wouldn't say that's pretty extreme to say they're doing what they're told, but they're often doing a lot of management.
Has curating become a victim of its own success when we walk into, as we said earlier, you walk into a sneaker store and they're telling you that they've got a curated selection of Adidas and Nike wares on display? Have we jumped the pickled shark here?
I think that the contemporary curatorial gesture of presenting or imparting value to work and doing that with a heightened and almost neurotic consciousness of an audience has always been what the curator does, whether it was in the art world or not. And so I don't really have a problem with this widespread usage of curating. I think it's a condition, and what it is a condition of are two things. One is that the avant-garde is kind of over, and that the curator maybe was responsible for that, meaning that the curator performed this sort of things that were brand new and never been done before so much and kind of swallowed it up so quickly that now we're in an era where nothing really seems new. So we have these sort of gestures of specialness that, you know, as you say, could take place in a sneaker store. I would see like sort of curating in the retail mode, a particularly sort of transformative aspect of the market after the Great Recession in 2008. So all this to say is that I don't really think it's been perverted. It's just going into wide usage for a number of sort of inevitable cultural reasons.
That was David Bowser, art critic and author of new book, Curationism, How Curating Took Over the Art World and Everything Else. And that book is out in April. And there we have it. Some answers to the question, why does everyone think they're a curator? Because it's a good job, because it's the current word that gives the commercially minded the aura of being artistically and intellectually minded, perhaps. And because the world's biggest pop stars, for example, are trying for a bit of the credibility that they feel the art world will grant them by curating this, that, the other, Instagram photos, Spotify playlists. Hell, it's even a program on Monocle 24. We'd say that curator is a noun and that it might be worth stripping curate from its new status as a verb. And that brings us to the end of this week's show. My producer was Holly Fisher. Maybe she's a curator. She's certainly my arch collaborator. Join me again next week when I'll be speaking to documentary maker Gary Hustwit, who's in a good position to answer the question, how do you talk about design, as he is the director of Helvetica, amongst other films. And in case you're wondering what on earth we'd done with our wonderful Midori House sessions, fear not. You'll now find that it's flown the nest to its own slot in the Monocle 24 schedule. This week, the gorgeously soulful Rebecca Ferguson is in the studio, and that will be available to download from this weekend on monocle.com/radio. You've been listening to Culture with me, Robert Bounds. Thanks as ever for tuning in.